Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy. Committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about the ghosts of the forest. Our guests are Jeff Richter of Mercer, Wisconsin, who is an award-winning nature photographer, including a 2001 IRMA Award for his photo essay on albino deer. His photographs are included in the new book, White Deer, published by Nature's Press in Mercer, Wisconsin. And Jeff, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. How are you?
I'm just great. Thanks so much. And John Bates of Manitouish, Wisconsin, is a naturalist, educator, and author of many books, including Graced by the Seasons, Spring and Summer in North Woods, which is published by Manitouish River Press. John provided the text accompanying Jeff's photographs in this new book, White Deer. And John, it's a pleasure to talk with you today as well.
Thanks, Jim. Happy to be on.
So we have two of the best people that we know of in northern Wisconsin to talk about this topic. Jeff, a really fine photographer, and John, a wonderful writer. And I certainly enjoyed your Graced by the Seasons, John.
Thank you very much. Always fun to write that kind of stuff and have it matter.
Jeff, let's talk about the first time that you ever spotted a white deer in the forest.
Yeah, it actually was about 10 years ago now, and we had moved our gallery from the Woodruff area up to Boulder Junction, and I started getting reports from people coming into our gallery about albino deer in the area, and it kind of piqued my interest as a guy that loves the woods and loves to observe, you know, all of its unusualness and beauty. And anyway, I was lucky enough to spot one on a particular day. I was out looking, and I just was instantly hooked by the kind of the mystique of them. I guess they're just so unusual looking and startling, really.
John, do you have a sighting that you can recall?
You know, I've only sighted them a few times, unlike Jeff, who has spent years watching them. And the only time that really sticks out in my mind was traveling a road listening to frogs. My wife and I do a frog survey for the DNR, and came around a corner, and at dusk, poor light, and all of a sudden there was a albino doe standing on the edge of the road. And it was one of those magic moments. It was very startling and stopped us cold in our car, and the superlatives just flowed. They're just remarkable animals to see.
Jeff, we should point out that you are not a fan of digital photography.
There's the understatement of the
filmmaker Tess Gallen says that despite this growing trend in digital photography, Jeff's purist approach of using raw color and light, an uncanny ability to capture profound beauty in that precise wild moment, a testimony to his dedication to preserving all that is natural. All of the images in this book were shot on film, and every effort was made to stay true to the original. So that's something that you take pride in.
Yeah, I just, you know, nothing against digital photography per se. It's just not, it's not for me. On film, nature feels a little more authentic to me, I guess, and I'm sure a lot of people would disagree with me on that, but it's just technology, you know, the digital end of it that just, at this point, really holds no interest to me at all. I've never been on a computer, and just the whole digital process really just doesn't appeal to me at all.
Mm-hmm. Do you sense that there is some skepticism now that goes over the heads of all photographers as a result of this growing segment of manipulated work being marketed as real?
Yeah, I think that probably is the case, and me included. You know, with all the digital shooting that's being done now, and it definitely has crept into the nature market, and I know of some fairly well-known instances where people Did some, rather significant manipulation to nature images that they did not fess up to and got caught. And, it definitely does throw a cloud of suspicion over everybody. And like I say, I'm in the same boat. I look at nature images with a lot more skepticism than I used to.
I Googled albino deer and came up with a blog that a woman had started called Save Albino Deer. And in there, and I believe she's from North Carolina, in there, albino deer births are estimated in statistical studies to be 1 in 30,000, which means that there can only be about 6 albino deer existing in the entire state of Wisconsin. Do you think that there maybe are a few more than that, or...?
Go ahead, John, if you want to take a swing at that.
Well, with 1.6 million deer in Wisconsin, our numbers would be a lot higher.
Oh, that's true. That's true. There'd be 60 of them.
Yeah. So the figures I've seen is 10,000, 1 in 10,000. I think no one really knows the truth of the matter. But what's intriguing to both Jeff and I is the occurrence of significant numbers of albino deer in north-central Wisconsin. And those were the specific deer that Jeff was shooting. He should tell the story more than I, but simply that there's a long-standing population in the Boulder Junction, in the Boulder Junction area, and over in Land O'Lakes, there's quite a few of them, and there's a number of pockets in north central Wisconsin of white deer that exceed that average number that you're referring to.
Jeff, why is it? Do you think that Vilas County seems to be this epicenter of the albino population?
Boy, it's just strictly conjecture on my part, and I really don't have a good answer for it. I think part of it is just the way the private property lays there. A lot of people like to feed deer up there and watch them. I think they're, in some instances, maybe a little more protected than they would be in other parts of the state. And above and beyond that, it's just strictly guess, and I don't have a good answer for you on that. But I will also add that as I've been on the road selling the book, and in the years that we had our gallery where people were coming in and seeing prints of these albino deer, that I've had reports from all over the state of people that have seen albino deer in their area. I just had someone from Fort Atkinson saying they were seeing them down there. Stevens Point area, someone was saying they were seeing them there.
Mm-hmm.
I have photographed them up into the UP as well. So I think they're scattered here and there, kind of everywhere to some degree. But why Vilas County? I couldn't tell you why they seem to be a little more prolific there.
Jeff Richter and John Bates are our guests as we talk about the new book that they have out called White Deer. It's published by Nature's Press, and Jeff, I believe that's your press, is it not?
Yeah, that is correct.
If you've never been on a computer, I doubt that you have a website. Then.
Well, there you are. We've been promising for years to our customers that we're going to get a website, and it still hasn't gotten done yet.
So if somebody wants to get a copy of this book, then what do they do?
Well, the easiest way would be just to call me direct, and I'm in the phone book, and phone number is 715-476-2938. But I also have been on the road quite a bit the last month, and I have them pretty well distributed from, Stevens Point northward. And actually, the Book World chain has just picked it up, so it should be available at all of those stores. It is not yet into Barnes & Noble's or Borders, but I suspect in the next couple of months it'll be available there as well.
All right. The book is called White Deer. It's published by Nature's Press. Jeff Richter and John Bates collaborated on this. Is this the first time that you two have worked together?
Go ahead, John, if you want.
John?
We've done some talks together. We're good friends for many, many years, over several decades. But we collaborated in small part on Jeff's first book, Seasons of the North. He had four individuals write essays for that particular book, and I was one of those.
That's right. I recall the book because Larry ran off with it after the show, and I've never seen it again.
Beautiful book, Jeff.
It's a beautiful book. It's wonderful, wonderful photography, and it was the introduction that we had to your work, and that was wonderful. If people would like to join the conversation to talk about the ghosts of the forest, albino deer, then give us a call in Madison. The number is 263-1890, otherwise toll free at 800-642-1234. I said before the news that I recalled seeing two albino deer up outside of Boulder Junction a couple of years ago. It certainly was a memorable moment, and it was dark, and only the headlights of the vehicle were able to catch them, but we were able to stop and back up and get them in the light again before they wandered off. It was very, very formidable. So let's take some calls, and Steve and Brown Deer will be first. And Steve, go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
Our cottage is on Palmer Lake between Boulder Junction and Lando Lakes, and for the past at least 25 years, we've had a white deer, and some years we've had as many as three albinos, bucks and does, and this is the first year that we haven't had one that we've seen, and the neighbors all say they haven't seen any white deer either, and I'm just wondering if it's in the gene pool and it'll come back, or is that pretty much the end of the blood or in the deer?
John, you want to take a swing at that?
Sure. I can explain the gene part, but Jeff, you photographed quite a few of those deer up in that Palmer Lake country, right?
Actually, the buck on the cover is right from that exact area, and I spent several years photographing that particular buck, and as far as I know, from what the people in the area there told me, he was 11 years old when he finally passed away.
And as far as hunting, there is no hunting of the white deer, is there?
Not in Wisconsin. There's 13 states, as I understand it, that have made hunting of albinos illegal. There are a number of states that permit it. Minnesota does, for instance, and Indiana does in nearby Midwestern states. But as for whether or not the albinos will return to the Palmer Lake area, they certainly can. And trying to explain recessive and dominant genes over the phone line is not my forte.
All right.
I'll try it very quickly, which simply is that genes are paired, and so when two deer mate, there's a recessive gene, which is the albinistic trait, and the dominant gene is the regular color phase, the tan color phase. And you have to get two recessive genes matched up in order to end up with an albino. So you could have an albino doe mate with a tan buck, a normally colored buck. And if that tan buck doesn't have any recessive genes within it, then those fawns that will be born will all be brown. They'll all be regular tan, but they will continue to carry the recessive trait. So what you have to have ultimately is two adults who have the recessive trait mating, and that's the key. So I'm sure Jeff has seen this, and in fact a number of his photographs show a white doe having a dark fawn that's quite common, and so there'll be this kind of cycling through it. But the statistic is if you have two deer with both a dominant and a recessive trait, it's only a 1 out of 4 chance that they will have an actual albino fawn.
Steve, thank you very much. And Jeff, you and John have had an ongoing difference of opinion about what you were seeing were true albinos. Tell me about that.
Well, it basically was just John was always under the impression that they had to have pink eyes to be truly albino. And I always argued that these deer with the bucks, when they're in velvet, the velvet is pure white. They have pink noses. Their hooves had basically no coloration in them. And I just thought that with all those aspects, and their eyes are completely different than normal deer, that that my guesstimation was that they were truly albino. But John was saying, well, they don't have pink eyes, so they can't be. Well, then John on further
investigation.
Yeah. further research did find a is it a geneticist, John, up in
Up at the University of Minnesota,
Duluth,
who is a expert on albinism, and he informed me that indeed you do not have to have pink eyes in order to be to have true albinism and complete albinism. And in fact, the deer that Jeff is showing in the book have this kind of pale bluish green irises with pink at the very edges.
Yes.
And anyway, what I learned through my research is how complex albinism is. There's lots of different forms of it, and I got in over my head real quick. And the downside, real downside of it is that Jeff was right, and now I have to listen to this for years to come.
We'll take more calls from Jeff Richter and John Bates as we talk about their book, White Deer, published by Nature's Press. And you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us today as we continue talking about white deer. On the back of this new book, Scott Craven weighs in, says that anything rare or unusual captures people's attention and imagination. I have seen thousands of deer while hunting, driving, or just being outdoors, but I'm always alert to the chance of seeing something really rare, a huge buck, a newly dropped fawn, or maybe even an albino deer. Jeff Richter's photographs and the accompanying prose by John Bates brings to life the albino deer, which most of us will never get to observe in the wild. The images will be a joy for any wildlife enthusiast. So that's pretty high praise from the master himself.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you how much it cost me to have.
I know that it had to cost you a lot because he doesn't hand out these very often, and he's asked all the time.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, then I wasn't aware of that, so I'm blushing right at the moment, and that's awful nice of him to say those sorts of things, but you know, it really is sort of a unique creature that that a lot of people don't see. And that it was not, I guess I wouldn't say easy, but once you understood where people were seeing them and spent any kind of time, you know, literally most of the time, if you just drive these areas towards evening and just kind of keep your eyes open, particularly in the summertime, I mean, these white deer just stick out like a sore thumb, despite their, I'm sure, understanding that they're very well hidden, like any deer would be. They really are very obvious to the eye. So
over the past few years, there's been a buck that has been spotted frequently in the Trout Lake campground areas of North Trout.
And okay.
I don't know whether you ever have had a chance to see that that buck or not.
No, I haven't in particular.
All right, let's go to Black River Falls next to Carl. Hi, Carl. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I got. When I was growing up north of Black River Falls here, we had a white doe born in the field next to our farm. We had quite a few people stopping at night. It was quite a kind of community attraction. And one thing I learned from the white deer was that deer follow you through the woods when you're strolling along. I was young, and I was bopping along through the woods all the time. And here you can see that white deer way back in the distance. You'd walk a little farther, and there she'd be. She'd just following you along.
Huh.
She only lived for a couple of years. But my other question was, did you ever hear of that place in Pennsylvania? It was a federal facility that got fenced off, and they had some white deer in there, and the white genes took over, and there was like 250 white deer in there?
Yeah, that's actually in upstate New York. It's the Seneca Army Depot, and they have some 200 white deer. It's a dominant white strain of deer. And that's what I originally had thought was going on in north central Wisconsin, that it was a white poat and not not a case of albinism. But and that's not the case for us in north central Wisconsin, but out there in New York, yeah, they've protected some, I think it's maybe 12,000 acres or so of this army complex with fence, and thus have inbred these this white strain of deer. And there's another place actually down in Maryland the same way. It's the Patuxent, Maryland facility, and they've got a herd of piebald deer, which are partially white and partially brown, with some almost completely white. But this kind of inbreeding occurs in those genetic strains.
There's also the Argonne National Laboratory East in Illinois that has about 40 white deer and within their fenced-in site. And apparently it stems from the late 1930s in that this guy who invented the skinless casing for hot dogs in Chicago, whose name was Gustav Freund, he had a herd of about 8 or 9, and then they were given to Argonne, and so that's where they are, and I think there are about 40 on that site.
And there's a herd, if you will, of white squirrels. I don't know what you call a whole bunch of squirrels. Is it a herd or what? But down in, I think it's Olney, Illinois, that are protected by the community down there. They have hundreds of pure white, a pure white strain of gray squirrels that are cruising around, as we up in the Northwoods here have a strain of black gray squirrels that are everywhere now and doing just fine. So that's just a color phase.
All right, on to Tony in Boulder Junction. Hello, Tony. What's in your mind today?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. It's amazing. I had 4 comments and questions, and all were answered in the last couple of minutes, except that this business about digital photography and no manipulation. There is a great deal of manipulation that goes on in the developing and printing of film as well. Ansel Adams is one of the best examples. So I don't understand why that distinction is made between digital and film, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Tony.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Jeff?
Well, he makes a valid point. To my mind, and actually the printing process after the image is made, whether you catch it on film or catch it as a digital image, the printing process is definitely digital. And, you know, all the pre-press work now is done with a computer and it is a digital process. The difference in my mind is that with film, you always have that original that you can go back and look at and decide whether you are going to portray it as the film saw it, or are you going to portray it as perhaps your imagination saw it, and the computer can create now. And that's the difference. Ansel Adams, his work was not any kind of an attempt to portray reality. You know, he was shooting landscapes, but certainly a black and white image is not how most of us perceive the world. And not only that, but he was using, you know, some filtrations that, you know, made the sky black and those sorts of things. So that you're really kind of, in my mind, comparing apples and oranges to some degree.
Jeff Richter of Mercer, Wisconsin, and John Bates of Manitowish, Wisconsin, are our guests. They collaborated on the new book, White Deer, published by Nature's Press in Mercer, Wisconsin. And Jeff says that if you're interested in the book, you can call him to get a copy. It's 715-476-2938. And let's go on to John next in Green Bay. John, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I first of all, thanks for the interesting program. And I just wanted to kind of make a comment on an experience I had. I have a place between Springstead and Park Falls off of 182.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a few years ago, I tend to spend a lot of time in the woods and around the National Forest up there. And a few years ago, I had a sighting near dusk over by Cable Lake. I don't know if you're familiar with that area. Well, anyway, it was startling to see it. I wasn't sure what it was. Well, the next day I called the DNR and talked to the biologist in Park Falls. And during the conversation, it was almost, I got the sense from the DNR person that I didn't see it. You know, that it was such an unusual sighting. As a matter of fact, he was suggesting that someone over at Cable Lake had some pet pigs that were white, and they had gotten away, and he thought that I had seen one of those.
So what did you actually see?
It was a white deer. It was an albino deer. It was a doe.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it was just so striking. But I thought it was interesting to get the comments from the DNR, and it must be because they're so unusual.
How long ago might that have been, John?
This was around 03.
Oh, so not that long ago.
No, not that long ago, no. Huh? No. And I tend to be out there a lot, and I've been going there for years, and I've never had such a sighting or an experience. I mean, it was really a jaw-dropper. And since then, I've done a little bit of reading and a little bit of looking into it, and I came across a video that's entitled Whitetail Wisdom. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No.
And in there, they do a little bit of a piece on the white deer, on the albino deer. Mm-hmm. And they have some photography of it, and I believe most of it was from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to pass that comment on, and I guess how startled the DNR was that somebody could have seen one.
All right, John, thanks very much for that report. I suspect that that's probably what a lot of people have heard as they've inquired over the years.
Yeah, I think, but I know a lot of people have commented to me when they first saw them that they thought they were seeing a goat initially. But the other thing that's very striking is that almost without exception, everybody that I've talked to that have seen albino deer remember exactly when and where and how, all the situation of when they saw their first one. It just really seems to stick with people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certainly nothing unique to deer in terms of their being albino. I had someone send me a picture just 2 weeks ago of an albino porcupine. And that is an odd-looking critter, I'll tell you.
Yes.
But there's some 300 species of birds and animals that have been documented as albinos, and from whales to snails and everything in between. So albinism occurs in basically all life forms, and I'm not sure why the DNR person would have been skeptical, maybe just not having seen one, but they're seen everywhere throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very uncommon, of course, but still.
John, talk about the TYR gene and how it factors into this.
Well, now you're starting to get complicated, Larry. Jim, I'm sorry, I'm calling you Larry. That's a Larry show. The TYR gene is an enzyme that affects the production of melanin. Melanin is the organic pigment that creates coloration, the main pigment. There's many other pigments.
Mm-hmm.
And if the TYR gene is not present or is present only in part or distributed incompletely, a variety of different things can occur. You end up with pure albinism, a complete albinism, or partial albinism. And so I've seen many partially albino birds in particular. I've not seen, I don't know, if a piebald deer is actually a case of partial albinism. I believe it is. But for birds, I've seen birds with white heads, with white wings, with white tails, different parts of their body. So the TYR gene, enzyme, I'm sorry, is the special enzyme that particularly affects the melanin production. And if melanin can go the other direction as well, if there's none, it's albinism. If there's too much, you end up with a melanistic critter. And Jeff had, a couple shots of melanistic critters. And I think you had a black wolf, didn't you, Jeff, in the book?
Yeah, and a black squirrel as well.
A black
mm-hmm.
squirrel.
Yeah.
That's where the production of melanin is over-amplified. And I see that when I go out bird watching. We'll see melanistic rough-legged hawks, for instance, a dark phase hawk.
We're talking with Jeff Richter and John Bates about the new book, White Deer. Let's go to Thomas next in Pittsville. And hi, Thomas. How are you?
Pretty good. I used to travel that road up by Boulder Junction there, and I saw them white deer a few times. But anyway, the reason I called is there's a guy, I'm from Marshfield, and there's a farmer out by Marshfield that had a bunch of white deer. I don't know if they were albino or not, but he raised them. And they used to have some tremendous racks on them. I used to take the grandkids out there. I'm not sure he has them anymore, though.
Is that around Marshfield, you say?
Yes, west of Marshfield.
John or
and
Jeff?
He had a whole yard full of them.
John or Jeff, do you have any knowledge of that?
No, that's a new story on me. And as I was saying earlier, that I've been amazed in my traveling around, selling the book and stuff. Just about every community I've been to, there's a story or two of albino deer in the area, or white deer, or similar types of stories.
if you wanted to talk to the guy, I could give you his name off the air.
Sure, that would be fine.
Sure.
Okay, we will have Keisha Mabra get your name number, and we'll pass it on to you both.
Very good.
Thomas, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. And let's go to Frank next in Ashland. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Say, I just want to say I heard this conversation, very interesting, but the first deer albino I ever saw was in the Boulder Junction area. But then I was fortunate enough to be walking out of my garage one day, and there in my backyard was an albino, a pure albino, and she was there, I'm thinking 7 years, every day. It became, it was almost unbelievable, but every morning I'd wake up and look for her. Of course, that was when we were allowed to feed, so I kept feeding all the time because I wanted to keep her close. And she was the talk of the town, and the little town I lived in, my dead-end road never had so much traffic on it, but she was just unbelievable, you know, it to this day, because I watched her have, I think, three sets of, a couple sets of twins, and I keep watching this day. I look in the field every morning just to think, you know, if it's in the genes, and another one might appear. But as far as the digital, the worst part of digital that I see is I had a lot of pictures of her. A lot of them I took with a 35mm, but I had some on my computer, and it crashed, and I lost those photos, and that was that was sad. But yeah, she was the talk of the town. And then we had a major flood in the area, which happened a few years in a row, and we kind of become an island out here. And after that, it was on Mother's Day, and she disappeared, and that was the end of it. But again, she was there for at least 7 years, so she was pretty old.
Okay. That's quite a story.
It was great.
Yeah, and actually, the general idea with albinism is that they probably are in some sort of a weakened condition physically compared to regular deer, but you know, for that doe to live for 7 years, that's a pretty healthy life, life span for a wild deer. And I know there's one over in the Mantuish Waters area right now that the locals have named Princess, and she is 13 years old,
wow,
according to the people that live around her. So they are able to live, you know, full lives, but, you know, the chances are that they may carry some weakened physical aspects to them.
Mm-hmm. Jeff in Boulder Junction, let's get you into the conversation. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. I appreciate you taking my call. I just was calling to mention that I got a friend up here that I work with that he's actually got a picture of five and possibly six at one time in his feeder. And John or Jim, you might be familiar with the Fish Trap Lake area, Fish Trap Lake, Road Oswego, back in there.
Sure.
Lake. And he's actually got six of them, I believe. And I know it's five for sure, but they're all standing there in the feeder, you know, all true albinos. And so as rare as they may be, there's times when, you know, a site like that was somewhat overwhelming to see. And I do have the picture. If you're interested in seeing it, I'd be happy to share it with you.
That'd be great. Love to see it.
It's a startling photo for sure. But, you know, I'm an avid bull hunter, avid gun hunter, and I do know, like you said earlier, that in Minnesota they do allow it. In fact, they make you a hero if you were to, you know, bag a big albino buck or something like that. You know, there's contests and so forth. I know some friends over there. And I probably won't sit well with folks on this side of the border, but I certainly would have no problem with the state opening them up. I mean, it'd be a wonderful trophy for anybody that's avid, deer hunter, and just kind of get your thoughts on that. I'm sure I got a good idea what they're going to be, but
well, there's obviously the argument of whether they're unique enough or special enough to protect them, or if from a purely management standpoint, whether they weaken the herd. And actually, I had talked to our local wildlife manager here in Mercer, and he said that the latest information that he had of 35 states that had documented sightings of white deer, he said it was exactly, I think, 18 allowed them to be hunted and 17 didn't, or just the flip-flop, but it was basically half and half.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much up to the to the individual states, you know, how they feel about them. And I know that despite them being protected here in Wisconsin, that just about every year or every other year somebody will shoot one and try to register it. And there's been quite a few that have been confiscated over the years, and quite a few that I see, you know, mounted that have been preserved in various communities around the north. So they definitely, people really connect with these animals, and even if they are shot or hit on the road by a car or something, commonly they have them stuffed and preserved.
You mentioned that when you started off on this and with this idea that you found several communities which display stuffed albino deer.
Yeah, absolutely. Three Lakes, I know, has one. Over in Florence, they've got a stuffed one. There recently was the DNR office in Woodruff has one right in their entryway. And I've just over in Spooner yesterday, and was at a bar restaurant for dinner, and sure enough, here in the corner of this bar, here's a albino deer buck that had been preserved, and it turned out it was hit by a train in Spooner, and the guy that was tending bar said his dad had it stuffed, and he thought it was about 25 years ago that it had been hit by a train in Spooner, and here was the head in the bar.
Jeff, thank you very much for your call. I think the last one will be Ken in Milwaukee. Hi, Ken.
Good morning. I have a cabin in Winchester myself, and I've been going up there for over 50 years. I love photography, and I could talk to these gentlemen for hours, but I'm wondering, both of these fellas have to spend a lot of time in the bush, in the woods. How do they protect themselves against Lyme disease?
Jeff?
It's called tick check, and just be aware of it. I mean, there's nothing I do in particular as far as, you know, I'm not a guy that loads up with insect repellent typically, and I'm not that worried about it, I guess, and I just make a point if I'm out for any length of time to just make sure I check myself in the evening and be aware of it, that's all. As troublesome as the disease can be, if it's caught early enough and treated with antibiotics, typically it's not a big deal. So I just don't worry about it in particular.
And John?
Well, up here, we consider it a dating ritual. You know, some guys invite women up to their apartments to see their etchings, and we just say, "Honey, check me for my ticks, would you?" So, that, you know, ticks aren't supposed to be able to bite you and have any impact on you for like 36 hours. So as long as you check yourself thoroughly every night, that's all I do. I don't do anything in particular beyond that.
John, thank you very much for being with us today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Jeff, thank you so much for putting the book out and spending the time with us. The book is called White Deer. It's published by Nature's Press. And people can get it by giving you a call. What's that number again?
Yeah, it's 715-476-2938.
Thanks very much. And again, the book is White Deer. We appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure.
If you'd like a copy of the program, it's available as a CD through the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. You're asking for program 822, F as in Frank. I'm Jim Packard. Thanks to Keisha Mabra for on-air phone production. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.